brings me a burst of satisfaction. 10, I chirp, and he clears his throat, reaching between us to readjust himself, no doubt throbbing with the wrong kind of ache. I smile. Feel free to drop me off at the nearest village. I can find my way from there, I say, deciding it's a good time to strike now that the male's cock is bruised. Figure I have two ways to relieve myself of his presence. Kill him or make myself disposable.
Like it or not,
he grinds out, gripping my waist and lifting me, settling me into a more comfortable position. So flush against him, my cheeks burn for reasons other than the stifling heat.
You're coming with me to Dom.
My heart pitches. Dom. So few go to the Burns capital and return. So fucking few. Probably because they all end up inside the beast I'm currently seated atop. Either that, or the city has jaws and claws and teeth much sharper than that of the one I just marginally escaped. I open my mouth, about to spit a barbed rebuttal, when Khan reaches past me and grips the tug ropes.
Gatunda, Raigan. Gatunda!
The beast heaves beneath us, blowing a steaming breath as he pushes up from his crouched position, making me feel as if the entire world is swaying side to side.
Hold the leather strap,
Khan rumbles near my ear, sending tingles down the side of my neck and making my breath hitch. Snarling, I grip the damn strap. You know what I hate?
Being told what to do,
he answers, quick as a blink. Exactly.
Well,
he says, giving the strip of leather a yank, like he's testing my grip on the thing, something I find deeply offensive, seeing as I don't do anything by halves.
It's a relief to know you possess a drip of self-preservation.
I'd rather possess that blade down the inside of your boot, I grouse as the beast folds his wings flush against his body. I sense the flow of energy building in Raigun's bunched haunches before he leaps into the sky with a booming slash of his wings, gravity thrusting me into Khan's chest so hard all the breath bursts from my lungs. We propel up. Up. Any words I had are swallowed into the depths of my tumbling guts, my grip tightening on the strap. My head tucks back into the crook of Khan's throat, his heart a fierce sledge against my spine, powering in unison with the thump of Raigun's wings. We whisk through a wispy tuft of cloud, then level out, the entire world seeming to regain its balance. I pull my first breath since we shoved off the sand, blown out with a shaken exhale. I miss the dragon's mouth. It was wet, it reeked, and there was a high chance of being swallowed, but at least I wasn't clinging to life by a single strap of leather, pressed close to a male who smells too good to flay.
You okay?
Khan asks, close to my ear, and every cell in my body prickles with awareness. I dare a peek over Raigun's side, expecting to be severed with fear as I take in the world below. The barren plains stretching far and wide in all directions like a ripple of rusty water. Instead, something tangible swells within my chest, something that makes me want to spread my arms, tip my head, and release a deep belly laugh that's raw and real and so fucking wholesome it makes me want to cry.
Answer me, Moonbeam.
There's an edge to his voice that whips me from my reverie, reminds me that I'm a prisoner of yet another vicious Vagor, dancing from one shackle to the next. The world shreds past beneath us while I mull over Khan's question. Am I okay? Yes, I whisper, cradling this strange, giddy feeling with a gentleness I didn't realize I possessed. Worried it'll break if I squeeze too hard. I'm okay. Diary entry. Elowin Nevon. Age 18 phases. 5,039 phases after stone. The creators are so quiet now, their voices vacant echoes, barely loud enough to grasp. I'm not sure why. Perhaps the ether stone is taking so much of me there's little left to listen with. That's how it feels. Like my soul's being suckled through the diadem's web of tendrils now magnetized to my skull. I hate it. How Ma survived this for over 100 phases, I'll never know. But perhaps I do understand why it took her so long to bring Hadeon into this world. Then me. Perhaps I understand why she was crying in the snow so many phases ago, when my world was small and my heart felt full and whole. I barely have the energy to breathe, let alone eat. Last cycle, I certainly didn't have the energy to help with the preparations for the committal. To stand on my own 2 feet, while Nathay and Akeri blew plumes of aqua flame on Ma and Pa's pyres, committing their bodies back to the elements. Instead, I sat in Hadeon's chair and watched them burn, my heart so raw from cycles of clutching them close that I almost wheeled myself into the fire too. Then came Hadeon's turn. Rather than blow flames onto his body, Alum scooped him up, tilled her wings, then tipped her head to the sky and lifted off the ground with my brother clutched against her. She soared unsteadily toward the deep dark where her ancestors rest, then curled into a ball, tucked Hadeon beneath her gammy wing, and solidified before my eyes, giving herself to death rather than live an eternal life without the one we both loved so much. Or perhaps she just knew how much he hated being alone. Everyone else went inside to feast in honor of my lost ones, while I lay in the snow and sang to Hadeon's moon, tracing the outline of that small, misshapen wing. Until Slotra came, settled beside me, and curled her tail into a fluffy nest I fell asleep within. I haven't woken from this terror yet. I'm losing hope that I ever will. Ma and Pa's aides say I have very few options, that the folk of Arithia won't accept a queen so weakened by the ether stone unless I'm bound with someone who can wield more than 2 elemental songs. And even so, I'm not yet old enough to rule. There's to be a meeting in Bothaim where my fate will be decided by the Tri-Council. Of course, I can't attend and speak for myself because princesses are to remain mute and veiled in public until their binding ceremony, something Ma and Pa never enforced. But they're not here anymore. It's just me, and I'm certain the sky is falling.
Rave. Chapter 32. The wisps of cloud burn off as we coast closer to the sun, Raikun's head stretched toward it like a hunter stalking his prey. I decide that's not far from the truth, considering the Saberscythe spawning grounds sit directly beneath the gigantic ball of fire. I tug the hood of Khan's cloak down, tucking deep into its shady hollow to avoid the sun's harsh rays. Entombed in his molten musk, I find a smooth, grounding sort of comfort that does things to me. Makes me picture sweaty, snarling warriors scorched beneath this overbearing blaze, a blood-heating smell that muddies my mind and makes me want to slap myself. Hard. He may have saved me from the Colosseum and had my back mended, but he's still a tyrant. Based on the way he stuffed his finger in my wound and made me scream, I'd say he has the same brutal streak as his kin. Probably worse, knowing my luck. He wants me for something. I just have to work out what. Bottom line, I can't let him take me to Dom. Something low in my gut tells me it'll swallow me whole. The feared Duath believe I'm dead. The Fade King and his guild of nobles believe I'm dead, presumably. I just have to find a way to escape Khan so I'm free to hunt Rek Zaros, then slice and dice him for murdering Essie and whipping my back to shreds. Vengeance crackles through my veins, making the tips of my fingers itch. A shiver rakes up my spine, and I use the sharp of my thumbnail to scratch at the skin on the side of another. Rygun coasts to the left, tipping me into Khan's arm, usurping me from my spot between his legs. I clear my throat, shuffling back into place, his powerful body a mountain stacked around me, like I'm a fall of snow tucked between his crevices.
"There's a sun veil in the hood,"
he rumbles, his accent so thick it's like it was ripped from the creator's mouths, not tumbled by the tides of time like so many of those who live in Gore. So unlike mine, forged in dark places where words were spat, hissed, and shrieked, where the only softness belonged to the tight embrace of somebody who no longer exists.
"If you roll it down, you'll be able to look around while we fly and better anticipate Rygun's motions."
The cut of his tone implies everything he's not saying. That I won't almost plummet to death every time Rygun banks or hits a current of air that forces him to dodge, dip, or sway. Tentatively, I loosen my hold on the strap and reach up, frowning as I blindly pinch and pull at the hood's hem, finding buttons I'm able to wedge free and release a roll of fabric that falls before my face. Huh. I lift my chin and dare a glance around. The material a fine sheen that casts me in a mask of shade and even allows me to look almost directly at the sun without fear of going blind. I take in the vast expanse of our surroundings through widening eyes. The rippling stretch of sand has given way to sun-scorched dirt torn through with a ribbon of bright blue silk that I suspect is a large body of—
"There's the River Acht,"
Khan announces, as I marvel at its wide, interloping weaves, the way it sparkles in the light. It threads as far as the eye can see, stretching for the sun, back toward the darkening sky in the south, something I confirm by peeking beneath Khan's arm. Tall, lanky trees cling to the rusty, sun-crusted banks, the tips of their numerous branches boasting blades of orange foliage that look sharp enough to slice. I even spot the odd golden worm-like creatures slithering through the dirt, leaving a wiggly trail. I look to the right, a few tendrils of the aurora still glinting over the horizon, though mostly it's now out of sight. Guess we'll find somewhere to stop for slumber soon. I'm just looking at the river again, fawning at the way the water appears to flow so freely between the chapped plains, when I notice Khan put a little pressure on the left tug rope. Rygun's right wing begins to rise. Anticipating the canting motion, I grip the strap and lean into the sway, finding the movement almost natural, this time managing to keep my seat between Khan's powerful thighs. The sun now beats upon the right side of our bodies, warming my cloak as we're carried toward a lofty band of auburn mountains stretched far and wide, north to south, emerging from the distant haze of dust torn up by the wind. "Where are we going?"
"There,"
Khan says, pointing toward a distinct dip in the Mammoth Range, which expands a little more with each thudump of Rygun's wings. Scorched earth gives way to lush, russet jungle, the likes of which I've only seen in paintings on shop walls in Gore, the heavily vegetated mountains before us so large and vast, they make Rygun feel like a pinprick in comparison. The only ranges I've ever seen have been sheer and sharp, but these are the opposite. Like somebody ladled scoops of stone, then dumped them on each other in big mounded heaps, clouds beginning to gather around their heads like puffs of gray hair. Rygun banks, aiming for a crevice, its soaring, jagged edges severed by the rushing river far below.
"Hold on,"
Khan growls, gathering both tug ropes in one hand, threading the other arm around my waist. My spine stiffens as he tips his body forward, forcing me to do the same, wedging me between himself and the hard-packed saddle, pitching my pulse into a bellowing roar. Why are you not steering?
Because he knows where to go,
Khan says upon the left side of my hood. Huh? The tightening of his dense body is the only warning I get before we pitch sideways, the motion so rapid my innards corkscrew the opposite direction. They finally manage to catch up, though just as they do, Raigun tips the other way. Back again and again and again, skimming past sheer, rust-colored cliffs, the river appears to have worn its path between, like it's reaching for something deep. Perhaps the other side. Perhaps if it gets there, the world will split in two. Another tip. Khan's inhale crushing his body so close to mine that I feel him everywhere. The way he flexes as he prepares for the next maneuver. The way his arm tightens around my waist, muscles bulging, clinging to me like I'm going to somehow slip free and plunge to my doom. Raigun battles the gorge with such precision, I realize he's done this many times, tucking his wings when the pathway becomes narrow, dropping momentarily before throwing them out again. We come to a dead end, water pouring down the rounded mountainscape above in wide, gushing steps, gathering in a large basin at its foot. The teal pool glimmers like a gemstone beneath diagonal beams of sun, the northern side cast in a deep pocket of eternal shade. Raigun swoops almost low enough to drag his tail through the water, scooping skyward, Khan's tensing body and my firm grip on the strap the only thing stopping me from ripping off the saddle, skimming down the length of the beast and plummeting into the pool. A smattering of water pelts my cloak as we shoot up, then level so fast a yelp slips up my throat. Raigun thrashes his wings, lowering us gently, then all at once. We thud upon the ground so hard my canine pierces my bottom lip. The taste of copper fills my mouth. Khan pulls back, ripping me with him. He flips the hood, tilting my head until I'm staring straight up at the underside of his scruff-covered chin. He clicks his tongue, the rough pad of his thumb dragging across my bottom lip with such tenderness. Every muscle in my body poises for a few rigid moments before my brain has a chance to recalibrate. Tyrant King, my captor, shoved his finger in my wound. Snarling, I bat his hand away and push to a wobbly stand, the insides of my thighs so chafed and achy I immediately buckle. He catches me, making a deep rumbling sound as he flips me over with effortless ease and lumps me on his back, drawing a dense oomph from my tormented abdomen now folded over his stone-hard shoulder. Being treated like a sack of grain is getting very old very quickly.
Your hips are sharp,
he grumbles, and I bash my fists against his back, knowing there's next to no point. Doing it anyway. I'll show you something sharp.
Every word that comes out of your mouth is sharp, Moonbeam.
He one-handedly unbuckles one of his saddlebags and tosses it over his other shoulder.
I'm half dead already, bleeding out at your feet. Can't you see?
I scoff. Please. Kicking up his leg, he eases down Raigun's ropes, my hood flopping so far over my head I can't see anything but Khan's brown tunic stretched over his tensing back muscles. He leaps the last few feet to the ground, then he's stalking away from the sound of Raigun's deep, resonating breaths, his booted footsteps softened by something I'm unable to see because of this creator's damn cloak. He moves down some steps, dumps the bag, and flips me off his shoulder. My feet land on the ground, though I have barely a moment to gather myself before the cloak is unpinned from around my throat and whipped away. What are you? He grips me around the waist, lifts me, and tosses me through the air. For two tight moments, I picture myself plummeting down a crevice and straight into the den of a velvet trog, about to be bound in slimy tendrils of excretion pulled from the gaping wounds in its palms. For 2 tight moments, until I dunk into a body of cool, crisp water, I scramble, kicking and thrashing, certain I'm about to be consumed by some waterborne creature that no doubt likes the taste of fey flesh, until I stretch my legs down and plant them on a pebbled ground. Oh. Shoving up, I push my head above the water and gasp for breath, just in time to see a bar of soap spearing at my head. I dodge it, then scramble to scoop it out of the water and throw it back the way it came, the bar thudding against Khan's chest, leaving a soapy smear on his tunic.
"You smell bad. Soap fixes that,"
he says, picking it up and tossing it back at me, splashing me in the face. I snatch it, pelting it at his crotch. "You need it more than I do."
"I've got my own fucking soap,"
he growls, catching it just before it can make obliterating contact with his cock. Oh. Failing to muster any more words to wield, I poke my tongue out at him instead. He returns the gesture, and the corner of my mouth threatens to lift. The king just stuck his tongue out at me. Muttering beneath his breath, he tosses the soap again and spins, kicks off his boots, then uses one arm to reach down and pull his tunic up over his head. My heart skips a beat, mouth popping open. The scars on his arms extend across every visible inch of his broad, muscular back, covered in so many small, sable dots of ink that it appears almost entirely blacked out. And upon the dusky expanse, a constellation of white stars and beautiful bouldered moons. Almost 2 dozen of them, both near and far. Most the size of an eye, though a few were the size of my fist. But they're not just any moons. My breath hitches as I take in this small, wonky one I love so much, sketched so exquisitely I can make out its misshapen wing. Something inside me stills as the backs of my eyes prickle, certain I'm staring out my window back at home, looking upon the glorious sight. One I never thought I'd see again. I almost reach out and touch it, almost trace the dips and peaks of its visible wing, the delicate swoop of its long neck, and the silken tendrils that hang off its jowls and around the back of its head. I'm so caught up in the trance that it takes me too long to notice the other moons upon the darkened expanse, ones I also recognize, ones that crowd my favorite little moon in real life, like Khan sat beneath that patch of sky while somebody mimicked the view with an inked etching stick. Almost perfectly. There's one moon that's out of place. The biggest, a silver moon I've never seen before, perched just beneath his right shoulder blade beside my little wonky one. I frown. That one doesn't exist. Not anymore. That's the one that fell.
"Not to shock you into strangling me with your hair,"
he says dryly, injecting the perfectly viable thought into my head,
"but as you so dutifully pointed out, I need to bathe."
He tips his head.
"Feel free to evacuate the west side of the plunge pool so I can use the waterfall to rinse myself to your standards."
"You'll be at it a while," I say, scooping up my soap and edging to the right, nipping another glance at the little moon on his back. "Hope you have refreshments in those saddlebags. You're gonna need them."
"You really do say the sweetest things, Moonbeam."
"Thanks. I try my hardest."
"Hate to see you not trying,"
he drones, yanking at what I realize are his pant fastenings when they're pushed past his muscular ass, revealing his dusky undergarments.
"I don't think my poor heart could handle it. Now, unless you want an eyeful, I suggest turning your attention elsewhere."
"I'm not giving you my back," I growl, my words chased by his airy sigh.
Suit yourself. But if I wanted to hurt you in any way, I had plenty of chances in the cell I rescued you from.
He spins. My eyes widen, the organ in my chest thumping to a halt. He's stacked together like boulders, his abdominals so defined they hardly look real. And though all that's impressive, it's far from the reason my lungs have suddenly stopped working. More pale scars mar almost every inch of skin on the front of him, too, both big and small, long and short. Some are fine-cut lines that are perfectly predictable, like they've come from the slash of a blade. Some are thick and messy, healed in such an angry manner that I can almost feel whatever it was that sawed through his flesh. There's distinct stab wounds and other marks that look like something toothy lunged for a bite and carved off curls of flesh. My gaze narrows on the round, flat, black and silver carving that hangs from a braided strap of leather bound around his neck, absorbing the intricate design. A saber scythe and a moon plume locked in an embrace. I frown, smothering the strange urge to ask if I can take a closer look. He kicks off his pants, grabs a small satchel from his saddlebag, then begins striding toward the west side of the pool. My gaze drops to his undergarments, material that does nothing to hide the outline of his manhood hanging thick and heavy between muscular thighs lashed in the welted remnants of old. My breath hitches. I whirl around, my cheeks attacked with a flush of heat. Burns. He has burns. I hear him dump something on the shore, the water disturbed by a wave of ripples. I cast a glance over my shoulder to where Khan is now wading toward a trickling waterfall that feeds into this small plunge pool, cushioned from all angles by fluffy foliage the color of copper. The squiggly lines of melted flesh look as though a fiery serpent lashed around his thigh, more than once. The lump in my chest feels heavier than usual. I wonder how he got them. They look almost strained, like they happened when he was small, and the scar tissue stretched as he grew. I shake my head, jerking away from the thought. Tyrant King, dangerous, has a very hungry dragon. Again, I peruse his many other scars while he lathers himself with his own bar of soap, frothing the thick black hair under his arms. He's a warrior, and the biggest male I've ever seen in every way, shape, and form. He's probably looked death in the eye more times than I have. Damn. Getting away might be harder than I originally anticipated. I'm not opposed to challenges, but I prefer them when I'm not already on the back foot, bound and with an iron pin lodged in my fucking shoulder. He works the bubbles through his beard and hair, stepping under the fall of water to rinse off while I fail to manhandle the bar of soap beneath my heavy tunic so I can wash myself. Hard with my hands tied together in such an awkward position.
Bet you're wishing you lied about your murderous intentions when I offered to free your hands earlier.
Khan drones. You have no idea, I mutter, also wishing I had a spare change of clothes so I could rip this tunic off my body. Finally be done with this scratchy cell garb. The soap slips from my hands just as I was about to wedge it up beneath the fabric, and I groan, settling instead for scrubbing my face and hair, working the bind from my thick, matted locks for the first time in a while. So focused on the task of trying to untangle my sodden tendrils, it takes me too long to register the off sensation tickling my skin, making it pebble. I frown. This water tingles.
Dunk lower,
Khan says, tipping back, allowing the waterfall to wash over his head again before easing free. With a dash of both hands, he pushes his shoulder-length hair back off his face, next running them through his beard.
It has healing properties.
Well, that's handy. He stalks through the pool, making for the shore, beads of water peppered across his beautiful body. I do as he said, needing my strength if I'm going to make a swift escape when the opportunity strikes, dunking low enough that the ripples he makes fold over my shoulders. He reaches for the small satchel he left on the bank, loosening the leather drawstring. Cradling the pouch, he digs through the contents until he reveals a pair of prongs, yanking my heart into my throat. Fuck, I forgot about them. I dunk so low the water's lapping at my chin as I scurry backward, keeping my narrowed eyes firmly locked on his, that flinty stare now puncturing me like a couple of arrowheads. If you stick those in me, I'm going to knee you in the cock.
That's an improvement on being slaughtered,
he says, charging through the water.
You'll certainly wish you were dead, I warn through clenched teeth, though all my confidence dissolves the moment my back collides with the stone wall that cups this side of the pool. Shit.
There is only one thing that could take me back to that dark place,
he mutters, such a hard punch of honesty in his words that my heart stills, some innate part to me pausing, listening, wondering.
And I will never let that happen again,
he finishes, drawing closer, eyeing me like I'm getting in the way of that very prerogative, of this strange promise he seems to have made to himself. What's that got to do with the pin in my shoulder?
Everything,
he growls, snatching me by the collar and yanking me into his atmosphere. In the same motion, I thrust my bound hands down, fist his undergarments, and hold him exactly where I need, my knee poised to spear forward and charge straight into his cock. Considering the size of my target, I'm more than confident in my chances to land a crippling blow. We both freeze, energy prickling between us that has every cell in my body standing on edge. His gaze softens, and he releases an exhale that's tangible against my skin.
It's been a long ride. I'm not untying your wrists because I'm in no mood to suture myself together this slumber, and you can't pick that pin from your own shoulder. It's wedged too deep in the bone.
I open my mouth to speak, but he cuts me off.
Your lips are already a shade paler than they usually are, your heart pumping at a faster rate. By this time next rise, you'll have a fever. You'll feel lethargic, heavy. By the following rise, you'll be dead.
I frown. I can't smell the infection he boasts carnal knowledge of. And unfortunately for both of us, trust is not a word I readily wield.
So what's it to be? The easy way or the hard? I'd prefer not to brace you against the wall if I can avoid it, but I certainly will if you give me no other choice.
Holding his fiery gaze, I cling on with clenched fists and stony pride. It's not that I don't want the pin out. I do. I'd just prefer to do it myself. The moment you let your captors weave their weapons between the cracks in your armor, you're already slit, guts spilling, heart weakening, dying.
You can't be strong if you're dead,
he murmurs, quiet enough that even Claude would struggle to catch it. I sigh, his firm logic a blow to my spine. I hate the sensation of my vertebrae crumbling as I loosen my hold on his undergarments and turn, resting my cheek against the mossy stone, watching the burbling waterfall pour down the jutting clefts. How do you know about the pool's healing properties? I ask, trying to distract from the fact that I just yielded to this male and accepted his help. Again. It chafes. I'm sure he's collecting these favors owed, preparing to shove them down my throat at his convenience. Like when he needs somebody suffocated from the inside out, or disembodied, or something else I haven't yet considered. The possibilities are endless. Khan clears his throat, easing my collar off my wounded shoulder.
I spent most of my adolescence and a number of my later phases as a warrior of the Jokal clan. They have always nested close to these mountains and recently claimed the crater formed by the fallen Sabersythe moon, Orva.
I frown, his scars suddenly making a lot more sense.
I used to sneak here during the slumber, soak until I no longer bled, then ride back before the aurora rose.
You're the king, I murmur as he threads his prongs into my wound, making all the nerves beneath my tongue tingle. My next words are wrangled past clenched teeth. Why did you spend most of your adolescence in a warrior clan?
Because my pa sent me there when I was 9, after it was discovered I could only hear Ignos and Baldur.
He mutters, pincers digging through my flesh while a warm leak of blood dribbles down my shoulder, leaching into the water.
Said that if I survived their harsh and grueling training methods, I might earn his respect.
My heart squeezes painfully. Creators. If that male were still alive, I'd slit him from chin to navel, then braid his fucking entrails while he was still conscious. What happened to him?
I cut off his head, then fed him to Rygon.
The words land like a kick to the ribs, almost winding me. Deserved, but why?
Because I was mourning someone I loved very much. I discovered my pa had done something unforgivable, and I took her revenge because I thought she no longer could. Now, I have regrets.
What was her name?
Elowen.
He murmurs and pulls, yanking the pin free. I open my mouth in a silent scream, certain he just siphoned half my skeleton through the tiny hole. Fucking ouch! I spin, gaze dropping to the bloody thing pinched between us, Khan studying the length, perhaps checking to make sure it didn't snap on its way out. That name echoing in my mind with the blaring throbs of pain still rioting through me. Elowen. I swish some water into my wound while he dunks the pin, running his finger up and down the length. My gaze narrows on his amulet, absorbing the intricate design, the two dragons embracing in such an intimate way that I wonder if it's a symbol of their lost love. A wave of something sloshes through me. Sadness? Envy? No, of course not. What happened to her? His eyes flick to mine.
She died.
He mutters with such finality the words feel like a shiv to the gut. He storms from the water, pulls on fresh clothes from his pack, and tucks the others away. He stuffs his feet into his boots, grabs his cloak, then charges up the stone stairway toward Rygon, leaving me to marinate in a blossom of blood and unease. Rave. Chapter 33. Drenched, tingling all over, and with a now itchy shoulder wound, I follow the path Khan took back up the red stone stairway, frowning at the tufts of copper grass that have sprouted in the cracks, pausing to run my hand over the soft blades. Seeing foliage this color is strange. In the fade, anything that manages to sprout from beneath the snow is a vibrant shade of green, and though I like it, I like this better. Looks sturdy, harder to kill. Maybe if I lived here, I'd actually be able to keep some form of vegetation alive. Something smooth and round catches my eye, my gaze sliding to a dark, ruddy Sabersythe scale half the size of my hand, resting amongst the grass. Probably Rygon's, perhaps flicked from a leg during one of his previous sheds. It's here, on this step, and I'm entirely unsupervised. Maybe I'm not so cursed after all? I grab it, cutting a glance at the top of the stairs while using my fingers to wedge the scale down between my wrists, hiding it from view. My heart thumping so loud, I'm half convinced every pair of ears in the jungle can hear it. I pull a steadying breath, victory bursting through my veins with such potency I almost do a dance. Nothing to see here. A rumbling sound has my gaze whipping skyward to the dense clouds gathering overhead. My brows pull together. I've heard it rains here, where the air is well above freezing. These mountainous areas a lush spawning ground for drenching storms. All I know is the slice of sleet and the soft, gentle fall of snow. The pale clouds bulge and swell, and I shiver despite the sticky heat, an electric current caught in the air I can't seem to shake. I crest the rise just in time to watch Rygun leap over the edge of the massive grassy plateau, his barbed tail the last thing to disappear, the entire mountain seeming to shift with his displacement. There's a clamorous roar, the thudump of his wings, and then he's scooping skyward. Khan stalks toward the edge with something round and wiggly caught in his fist, scowling as he watches the beast carve off through the gorge and disappear from sight. "Where's he going?" I ask, moving closer, weighing my chances of reaching the male in time to shove him off the cliff.
"Like you," Khan mutters, waving the shiny black bug at me. "Rygun is allergic to help."
I frown, eyeing the creature, its spindly legs waggling, claw-like pincers protruding from what I suppose is its face nipping at the air. "What's that?"
"A tick I found nudged up under Rygun's armpit where his scales are still hardening from his last shed."
He flicks the thing at his feet, crushing it with the heel of his boot. It pops, purple innards splatting across the grass.
"If left unattended, they release a toxin that can turn a dragon rabid."
He cuts me a hard look, shaded by thick lashes and the darkening sky.
"There is no cure for an animal intent on torching cities and slaying everything in its path except a swift and merciful death."
My blood chills. Torching cities. Slaying everything. Swift and merciful death. None of it stacks up for a king who apparently condones that from his beast, at least according to rumors. Confusion wrestles through me, my gaze dropping to the purple splat on the ground.
"Come."
Khan hefts a saddlebag over his shoulder, wrapping his arms around another and heading toward a path etched through the dense foliage ahead.
"If you want food, that is,"
he tosses back at me.
"Can't escape until you've eaten. You'll pass out and wake up right back where you started."
He's got a point. Sighing, I follow his lead, the ropes around my wrists now swollen with moisture.
"I think you accidentally tied this too tight," I say, looking left to right, trying to trace the chirping sounds that keep scratching through the air, like somebody's dragging sticks up and down many ribbed, hollow logs.
"I assure you,"
he says, kicking a fallen branch off the track like it personally offends him.
"That was no accident."
"If my hand falls off, so will my iron cuffs, and then I'll call upon Claude to suffocate you in your sleep."
"Such pretty promises,"
he muses, his tone so dry it could wick all the moisture from my body. The path opens to another plateau, though this one supports a small stone dwelling that looks like it grew straight from the ground. It's got two levels, bearing oddly shaped windows, not round or square, but somewhere in the middle. The dwelling is crooked one way at the bottom, the other way on the second floor, the roof peaked. The walls are knobbled in places and dipped in others, like little thumbs pressed them into place. I pause, transfixed by it, a smile catching the corner of my mouth. It's like a youngling drew the building on a piece of parchment, then peeled it off and whispered life into its walls,
giving it the strength and substance to stand. This south wall boasts a makeshift trellis of crisscrossed branches clothed in a vine heavy with fat purple molly fruit, their scent zesting the warm air. Beneath it are rows of raised garden beds, each bearing a flush of frilly vegetables, some of which appear to have gone to seed. My gaze lifts, sweeping over the structure, unable to shake the feeling that this place isn't attended as much as it once was, despite the warm sensation that fills my chest just looking at it. I wonder what song it sings, picturing it a deep, rumbling, happy one, more content than a regular slab of stone. I wonder if Claude twirls past its rounded edges, sipping from bits of its serenity. Most of all, I wonder why just looking at it makes the backs of my eyes sting. Blisters of emotion, I pop faster than Khan popped that tick. He moves between the garden beds, drops his laden bags on the ground, then grips a lush tuft of vegetation around the neck. He rips a kennet root from the heaving dirt, its squiggly length dusted in rust-colored soil that falls back to the ground as he shakes it off, then thumps it against my chest. Frowning, I curl my arms around the vegetable, cradling it while he repeats the process, over and over, adding to the growing pile until I can hardly see over the top of it. "Are you cooking Raigun vegetable soup?" I mutter, wondering how I'm expected to see where I'm walking with my arms packed so full.
"I'm making enough so we don't have to stop at any villages before we reach Dom,"
he tells me, dumping something that's particularly hard to balance upon the pile and almost undoing me.
"I'd prefer not to be seen with you, if I can avoid it."
"Fuck you too, Khan Vagor." "I'm not particularly fond of being seen with you, either. Not unless I'm toting a pike with your head on the end." He lumps another vegetable on the pile without shaking it off, dusting me in soil that peppers my hair and clings to my damp skin. Maybe he's getting sick of me. Good. I'll keep agitating him until he drops his guard, then make a move. I quite like my chances of surviving in these mountains, given the abundance of water and fertile vegetation. In fact, I'll probably thrive, gather my strength as I move south. I think these mountains finally kneel somewhere near Bogeth. Perhaps if I charm a full-grown molten maw, I can easily hunt Rek Zaros. My options are endless now that I'm free. Well, my thoughts drift to my rope-bound wrists, to the nulling iron cuffs still locked around my arms and ankles. Almost free. First, I have to get away from this male and his dragon and these filthy creator's damn vegetables. And this cozy little house with its pretty, idyllic view and a warmth that tells me it's held so much more happiness than I'll ever understand.
"I think we have enough,"
Khan rumbles, placing a flush of herbs atop the pile before I hear him gather his saddlebags, the sound of his heavy boot steps making my ears twitch.
"Follow me."
How?
"Tether yourself to the alluring tone of my voice,"
he drawls, and I roll my eyes, tentatively following the sound of his steps instead, sliding my bare feet through the fluffy grass at a slow and steady pace in the effort not to trip. I crash right into the back of him and dust myself in another layer of dirt, suppressing a cough so I don't drop anything. I wait for him to place his bags on the ground, then unlock the door, hearing the squeal of metal hinges before he shifts out of my way. I'm about to step into the dwelling when he says,
"Wait, I'll unpack you first. Don't want you dragging more dirt across the rug than necessary."
"Ever heard of a bucket? You just threw me in a pool and tossed a bar of soap at my head. Now I'm more filthy than I was before."
"No,"
he grinds out, relieving me of my pile one bulbous, overgrown root vegetable at a time.
"Before, you smelled like spew, rage, and dead things. Now you smell like soil. This smell calms me.
You don't seem particularly calm.
He removes the final vegetable, transferring it into a large wooden bowl with all the rest of the produce.
I'm calm.
He cuts me a dark look.
You've just been lucky enough to avoid witnessing my other temperaments.
Yet. The unsaid word slams between us like a gavel. I hold his pointed stare, clumps of dirt rolling down my cheek and falling from my jawline. I, too, have many temperaments I'd like to test against his not calm. Grunting, he severs our stare off and strides through the room. I attempt to brush myself down, flicking more dirt onto the grass while I take in the dwelling's cozy, eclectic interior, rich with a soft assortment of organic furnishings, mostly in burn tones. Burnt orange, warm umber, black, bronze. A large kitchen takes up half the floor, bearing three long benches that run the walls in the shape of a giant U. There's a butcher block that breaks the space in two, the right half of the room garnished with two low cedars and a small table, all without any gaps beneath, like they were grown from the ground, embellished with plump cushions and tufted throws. A crooked staircase on the right leads to what must be the second level. My gaze cuts to the windows, tawny glass that's distorting to look through, quirky and organic, like the rest of this tiny home. What really catches my eye are the stone carvings lining the windowsills. Saber scythes in all shapes and sizes, though no bigger than my fist. No two were the same, some bearing more tusks than others, more or less spears adorning the tips of their tails, almost as if they have little lives and personalities of their own. What is this place? I ask, stuck on the threshold.
It was Ma's retreat,
Khan says from his spot before the basin, rinsing a vegetable beneath the gushing tap. He places it in a different bowl, then grabs another, drenching it. Was. I didn't know his Ma had passed. Have never researched the Burns' reigning history beyond the fact that the three Vagor brothers each rule one of the three kingdoms. Now I wish I had. I glance around, failing to shift the heaviness now sitting on my chest, crushing my ability to breathe properly. Is there somewhere else I can spend the slumber? He pauses what he's doing, turning his head the slightest amount as he says,
Somewhere else.
Feels wrong to step into a female's warm, homely dwelling when I've fantasized about killing her son. This feels like a family space, I murmur, taking in the artwork littering the walls, the crooked alcoves and shelves packed full of bits and pieces that can only be precious memorabilia. I'm not family. Khan's coarse growl fills the space so abruptly I jolt, stare whipping back to him as he says,
Get in the dwelling, prisoner 73, or you'll miss out on this meal.
His shoulders appear taut and stiff, and there's a tension in the air that makes it hard to inhale. Part of me wants to tell him to choke on the order he just gave me and die a painful death, but then my stomach rumbles loud enough to wake a sleeping dragon. He raises a brow. I roll my eyes, chew my bottom lip, try to wriggle this situation into a spot that fits comfortably beneath my ribs. I don't know a lot about northern traditions, but I once read that it's considered rude not to offer something in exchange for shelter. Maybe that's the answer, and maybe I shouldn't shed Khan's blood while staying here. That would feel wrong, I think. I have nothing to gift in exchange for the time spent under your Ma's roof. There's a moment of utter stillness before Khan turns his head a little more, just enough for our eyes to meet.
Your name will do.
My name. I open my mouth, shutting it as I reconsider, then shake my head and blurt, Rave. All the color drains from his face. He pulls a breath,
slow, like he's consuming a meal he's been looking forward to for longer than I care to admit.
Just rave.
Another name sizzles through my soul like a burning scream. Firelark, Firelark, Firelark. Just rave, I say, stuffing the other down. Far away. Gone. He nods slowly, the ball in his throat rolling.
Well, thank you for the offering,
he says, followed by a soft
rave. Please enter my ma's dwelling.
He handles my name with such care and precision, a shiver rakes up and down my spine, a sensation I try to ignore, stepping over the threshold and into the space that feels much like a warm hug. Perhaps the reason it chafes. Haven't had one of those since. Clearing my throat, I lift my chin and move toward the butcher block, sitting atop one of the three knobbly stools that each appear to be carved from a single stump of wood, placing my bound hands on the counter. Khan resumes his rinsing, time ticking by. He finishes cleaning the vegetables, dices them with a blade I duly note the location of, then piles them into a large pot with water, herbs, and salt. He sets it on the stove and clunks a lid on it. He opens the small grated door of the stove's plump metal belly, then pulls a weld from his pocket and flicks the hood. I cast my attention elsewhere as he whispers a sizzling word that coaxes a bulb of flame through the opening, kindling the prepackaged pile of sticks into a roaring flame. Closing the metal grate, he turns, his warm gaze roaming the side of my face while I stare out one of the windows to the world beyond. The room darkens by the moment, more and more clouds crowding the sky, sponging most of the light, bar the flickers of orange spilling through the grill. He snaps the lid back on his weld.
You don't like fire.
I don't like males with cocks bigger than their brains. I slay him with a stare I hope cuts the head off his observation. Unfortunately, that eliminates half the population. Silence bleeds between us, a victim of my slashing ire. Arms crossed, he watches me, unblinking, unyielding. I watch him with the same intensity, sharpening more barbs to sling should he decide to have another pick at the subject. One that is, in fact, none of his fucking business. He clicks his tongue, then moves around the butcher block. Perfectly still, I watch from my periphery as he lumbers to the door and retrieves his saddlebags, dumping them on the long, cushioned cedar. He brings the smaller one to the bench and flips the satchel open. Rooting through it, he pulls out a scroll of leather he unrolls, bearing a tidy collection of tools. He lifts a small hammer from one section, a tapered nail from another, and jerks his chin at my hands. Frowning, I ease them toward him, remembering too late that I have a scale tucked between my bound wrists. My heart leaps so high up my throat, I almost choke. Shit. I silently beg him not to notice while he settles my hands on a folded piece of cloth, sets the nail against the pin of my right cuff, then taps it. My brow lifts as the pin slides out, allowing him to loosen the iron cuff and wriggle it free, though he shows no inclination toward the one on my left wrist. What about my other one? I ask, nudging my still-bound hands at him. He bats them away.
Oddly enough, I'm in no mood to have my lungs minced.
Well, what about my ropes? I shove my hands at his chest again. I had a perfect opportunity to shove you off the cliff earlier, but I didn't. Only because I got distracted by the tick story, but he doesn't need to know those finer, rather embarrassing details. I'm not usually so bad at slaughtering. That should earn my hands some freedom, surely. Small sign of goodwill, I say, winking at him.
Foot.
He drudges out, and I scowl. What in the creators do you think I am? Some sort of filthy animal who goes around putting her muddy feet on cute, oddly shaped butcher blocks? He frowns.
You think it's oddly shaped?
I shrug. Little bit.
Huh.
He says, scanning it, a deep line still etched between his thick brows. That only adds to the cuteness, in my humble opinion. Wish I had one just like it. Guess I could, except I can't shape stone well to save myself. The flip side of blocking Baldur out so much I can only wield a few roughly hewn words, and none of them very well. That, and I don't have a home anymore to put one in. Ouch. Khan clears his throat and slaps his hand on the top.
Foot, Rave, before the soup burns.
Bossy and a bad listener. Definitely needs to die. I'm not putting my filthy foot on your ma's butcher block, King Khan Vagor. End of story. His head cocks to the side.
And I'm not kneeling before you for fear of being kicked in the head hard enough to knock me out cold so you can steal a blade from the drawer, slit my throat, and escape.
Valid concern, honestly.
Foot. Unless you want to keep your pretty anklets on.
He goads, and I kick the damn thing up on the stool beside me instead, tarnishing the surface with a smear of dirt. He glares at me. I flash him a smile.
You're very stubborn,
he says, moving around to crouch by the stool. So nice of you to say. I sharpen that weapon daily.
I can tell,
he mutters, tapping the cuff free of one chafed ankle, then the other. When he's done, he tucks the tools in the pouch and rolls it up, stuffing it in his satchel, a waft of cold air blowing back at me from within the packed hollow. Frowning, I catch a glimpse of something silver and shimmery inside. Something that stills my heart, my next words cut with a serrated blade. What else is in there?
None of your business.
Your precious moon shard? He strikes me with a stare that chills me to the bone, then flips the satchel's flap. Giving me his back, he strides toward the stove, lifts the lid on the pot, and stirs the soup. I blow a wisp of dried hair from my face, gaze shifting from the satchel to Khan, back again. Scratching at the skin beside my nail, I tap my foot against the ground, drawing a breath so big I'm certain it'll shift this heaviness from my chest. It doesn't. Moon shards come in all different hues, depending on which fallen beast they split from. Most are dug up by those who work in the mines, from long-ago moonfalls from long-forgotten times. There's only been 3 documented moonfalls since folk began scribing our history onto scrolls, and each occurred somewhat recently. An adolescent saber-scythe barely 3 phases old that fell within the Boltanic Plains, a molten maw large enough to destroy a chunk of the wall, littering the sky with a cloud of dust and sand that could be seen all the way from Gore, and a moon plume, the first to fall in more than 1 million phases, perhaps longer. That beast was not small, and it did not fall lightly. It did not plummet without aftershocks of carnage. Silver as the aurora ribbons, that beast shone with the light of 1,000 moons before gravity lost its grip on the thing, before it fell, bursting into a litter of shards that blasted a crater within the shade so large a city could dwell within its dimpled depth. Or so I'm told. I've seen shards of it before, in a place where I was remade more times than I could count. Those glorious shards, one of the only forms of luster that didn't cause me some sort of pain. I don't know why Khan's collecting bits of the fallen moon plume that ripped from the sky more than 20 phases ago, but my gut tells me that's a secret best kept stuffed in his leather satchel. For that reason alone, I let silence have its crown. Rave. Chapter 34. Standing over the other side of the butcher block, Khan splits his focus between stirring the soup and crafting one of Rygun's scales into a blade, chipping off bite-sized crescents with a round-mouthed tool. It must be handy to have a ready supply of saber-scythe scales, given most dragon-scale blades maintain their slitting edge forever. They're also lighter than any metal and hardier when shaped correctly, the very reason I have so many, despite their steep price tag in the Fade. Had. Fucking had. Wreck probably has most of them now. The fuck. Can't wait to stuff one so far down his throat he chokes on it. Khan inspects his makeshift blade from all angles, loose hair hanging around his face. His black tunic is rolled to the elbows, exposing slash marks up and down his corded forearms, half the buttons popped, offering peaks of dense chest muscles that tense with each strong clamp of his tool. Another thumbnail-sized crescent of scale chips off and flicks into the large clay bowl he's working over. I avert my gaze toward the pot of bubbling soup, steam escaping from around the rim of the waggling lid. Killing him is looking harder by the hour. I thought it strange that he had no beaded soldiers with him, no powerful entourage, at least not for the part of his journey he's sharing with me. Though I'm beginning to wonder if he simply doesn't require the protection, perhaps so confident in his own abilities that any extra bodies are unwanted baggage he can't be bothered to cart around. My stare drifts to his satchel. Or perhaps he just wanted to travel incognito because he doesn't want folk to know he's hunting moon shards. Either way, he knows how to shape a damn fine blade. I flick another glance at it, jealousy rippling through me as he places the pretty weapon in the bowl with the excess shards and sets it all on a back bench, far from my reach. Clever, Tyrant King. He moves toward the stove and lifts the lid on our meal, releasing an eruption of steam he bats away, stirring the fragrant concoction with a wooden spoon before scooping some of the broth to blow on it. He sets the edge against his lips,